Hello and welcome to Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Well, you know, I hear a lot in the small business sphere these days about strategy, the importance of being strategic when it comes to social media, the importance of being strategic when it comes to planning your business. And, of course, those things are really nothing new. We all need a strategy, whether it's planning a business or basically teaching our kids how to tie their shoes. It doesn't matter. We need to have a strategy. But you know what? That word is being tossed around a lot these days, and I kind of get the feeling that a lot of us need a more detailed and specific understanding about what it means when it comes to maximizing our success as small business owners. And that's what today's show is all about. My guest is Willie Peterson. He is the author of Strategic Learning, How to Be Smarter Than Your Competition and Turn Key Insights into Competitive Advantages. If you're listening to the show at Indie Business Radio, make sure you click on the chat link and you can join us live. You can also share your comments and questions at my Twitter page at twitter.com/indiebusiness or also on Facebook at facebook.com/indiebusinessfans. Well, let me tell you a little bit about our guest today. He was raised in South Africa, and he received a Rhodes Scholarship to Oxford University. He's a former practicing attorney, and he's also served as the CEO of multi-billion dollar companies such as Lever Foods, Seagram USA, and Tropicana. My favorite orange juice, no plug there. He is a professor of the practice of business management at the Columbia University Business School, and in addition to his new book, Willie is also the author of Reinventing Strategy, which is widely used by organizations as a guide to the creation of winning strategies and has been translated into Spanish and Chinese. Welcome to the show, Willie.
Thank you very much, Donna Maria. My pleasure.
So, Willie, let's just dive right into this term strategy. As I said, I hear it a lot. People write about it a lot. And, of course, it's important. But I want to hear from you, a Columbia University professor of business. What is strategy and why is it so important? And maybe even how is it misconstrued today?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think to start off our thinking, it's necessary to say that strategy as a concept has been largely misunderstood and therefore misapplied a lot in business. The main reason is that it's been overcomplicated. People think it's an ultra-sophisticated thing that happens up there in the clouds somewhere, that mere mortals like us don't concern ourselves with strategy. It's a kind of the grand view of life. Well, of course, nothing is further from the truth. Strategy is an utterly simple idea, and therein lies its great power. The way I think about strategy is that, first of all, the way we create our futures as an organization is through the strategies that we pursue. Basically, strategy is about making choices about where you will compete, which customers you want to serve, what you will offer them, and how you will win the competition for value creation for those customers. That's it. It's a set of choices, and it's based on the reality that we all have limited resources, no matter how large we may be. And therefore, we need to make choices on the best use of those limited resources to create competitive advantage. That's essentially what it's about.
So as small business owners, I know you've served some of the largest companies, but of course I know when you walk into your business classes, you're dealing with a lot of people, and many of them are startups or maybe people who don't even have a business yet. How do you translate that into terms that companies, you know, they just don't have the kind of business background, maybe they've never had a chance to take one of your classes. How do you translate that for really lay people who these days, Willie, are really trying to start businesses in circumstances where they never really thought they would before, simply because the economy is kind of demanding it?
Yes, sure. Well, I think for startups and small businesses, strategy is particularly important, and the key after that is to keep it utterly simple as you grow and become larger and more complex as an organization. But the best way to think about it is to think about strategy as a series of questions that must be answered. Question one, which customers do we want to serve? We really need to be utterly clear. It's a big, wide world out there, and even in a particular market, there are different customer segments with different sets of needs. So being very clear about which customers you seek to serve. Second question, what are the most important needs of those customers that I seek to serve? Remember, the customers have choices. That's the definition of a customer. If a customer does not have choices, that's not a customer, that's a hostage. So customers have choices, very basic point. So, okay, now you've said, who are my customers? What are their most important needs? Third question, what will I offer these customers? Which products, which services am I going to offer? Be utterly clear about that. And here comes the centerpiece of your strategy. What is my winning proposition for those customers? I'm back to the point that customers have choices, and a winning proposition for customers is, what unique benefits will I offer my targeted customers that gives them a compelling reason to choose me? They have choices. And being very clear about that winning proposition is the vital aspect of strategy. Now, I want to emphasize something. It may be that a number of your listeners have heard of the phrase value proposition. Donna Maria, I'm sure people have bandied that phrase around and you've heard it before.
Absolutely.
Now, here's something I want to emphasize. It's very important that we completely banish this phrase, value proposition, from our way of thinking, our mental models, if you like, and from our vocabulary. And the reason for that is a value proposition is not a comparative statement. And in a competitive world, everything is comparative. A value proposition is an absolute statement. It says, I'm offering you this value, this benefit for my product. Now, customers are looking at you in a comparative mindset. You need to speak back to them in a comparative language. What is different or better about your offering that gives them a compelling reason to choose you? That's a winning proposition. Value proposition simply says, here's a benefit, I hope you like it. A winning proposition looks at competitors, looks at the customers, the fact that they have choices, and then gives them a very compelling reason through a point of differentiation. A very compelling reason to choose your product, your offering, over the competitors. That's the centerpiece of it. After that, it's important then to define your key priorities. Know between 3 and 5 key priorities, those very few things that make the biggest difference in achieving your winning proposition. So it's not more complicated than that.
So let's go through these in a little bit more detail, if we could, one at a time. What customers do you want to serve? And there's two things I want to kind of address here, really. The first is a lot of small business owners have so many talents, so much creative energy, and so many different things that they're, you know, fairly good at. They could make a business out of many of them. Help us understand some of your tips for narrowing it down to what makes the most sense in a competitive marketplace like the one you just described.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, I think the formula we need to have before us all the time is that focus wins, and all things to all people is the original recipe for failure. So the question is, how do we create an intense focus on the few things that matter most? And in most startups, we're facing major competitors, big organizations with a lot more resources than we have. So finding our right niche, where we're going to compete and create greater value and outmaneuver those big companies, is the key critical thing. If you can, if you've done enough, if you like, research, it doesn't have to be huge surveys, but mm-hmm. Done a survey of what the market is, what the major segments are, where the profit opportunities lie, etc. If you've done that, very clear, intense focus, and then build up your competencies and generate and retain customers as best you can. If, on the other hand, you're not sure and that there are maybe two or three possibilities, then you can explore that through doing some tests. Test out some products or offerings to those two or three customer groups, and quickly decide where you want to focus as quickly as you possibly can,
mm-hmm.
and dig in very strongly with that intense focus behind that choice that you've made. But the worst thing I think we can do as startups is to pursue a very broad range of offerings at the outset.
I love what you said. All things to all people is the original recipe for failure. That's so great. So if we move to step two, what are the most important needs of customers I seek to serve? What are some of your tips for very small business owners to collect that data? That is pretty expensive and time-consuming to collect. Do you have any tips for the best, most honed-in questions to ask?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I honestly think that startups, small businesses, have an advantage over large bureaucratic entities because these large companies often do these mind-numbing surveys of the market and customers and all the rest of that stuff and ask them a whole string of questions. Very few insights come out of those kinds of major surveys. They're really just a starting point of where to dig deeper. The best way to do this is to have lots of conversations and to be observant. Be like a sociologist or what do you call those folk who go out into the field and study tribes and things like that. The name escapes me for a minute. Procter & Gamble practices, they call it ethnography. And be observant. Watch people. You know, when I was president of Tropicana, I know that's a larger company, but it has very single-minded focus on its brand of orange juice. I used to spend my Saturday mornings standing near the chilled cabinet and watching people choose and chatting to them, not divulging my identity until maybe right at the end of the interview, and saying, "Me mind if I ask you a couple of questions?" And keep digging, and the more questions you ask and answers you get, the more you'll find out where to dig a little further. What are the competing alternatives? What are they really looking for? Now, let's take Tropicana as the example. What are customers really looking for in an orange juice? Now, we can guess, we can do surveys, etc. But you know what we found out is that this freshness impact that you get in your mouth as you sip an orange juice is the most important factor for people, and it's very energizing to have that lovely fresh taste.
Mm-hmm.
And what we discovered was that the little pulp sacs, as we call them, in the juice, the more you keep those intact through gentle processing techniques, so that when the consumer drinks the orange juice, those pulp sacs, which is nature's packaging, far more effective than the packaging that we use, when they break in the mouth and you get fresh orange juice, that's the best taste you can possibly get, because the moment those pulp sacs break, oxidation begins and taste begins to deteriorate.
Mm-hmm.
So just the understanding that it's that fresh taste at the end of the day that people are looking for, as a direct contrast to squeezing the juice themselves. Then you're giving them consistent quality, because when you squeeze the juice yourself, you get a variety of different oranges and tastes, etc. Now, that came from an intense set of questioning and tying it back to what we could do that provided a unique satisfaction of that particular benefit. Then we went back to the product and the processing people and said, how can you do this better than the competitors? And then came up with this gentle processing idea.
Great advice from Professor Willie Peterson on the strategies, the questions that we need to ask our customers and ourselves in order to maximize our success. We've talked about what customers do you want to serve and being clear and precise, and we've also talked about how to find out some of the most important needs of those customers so you can serve them well. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Professor Peterson about how to figure out exactly what to offer those customers, and then, so significantly, what are our winning propositions? How do we identify them? How do we convey them to the people that we want to serve? That's when we come back. This is Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're talking today with Professor Willie Peterson. He is the author of Strategic Learning: How to Be Smarter Than Your Competition and Turn Key Insights into Competitive Advantage. So, Willie, I'd like to just kind of follow up on where we left off. You talked a little bit, I loved your example of what you did at the grocery store to kind of watch what consumers were doing when they picked out the orange juice of their choice. And something that jumped out to me was that you were selling more than orange juice. You were really selling an experience to them. Is that a universal principle for business owners to understand?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And the word I was looking for before in terms of what we need to do to understand customers is to be, if you like, amateur anthropologists. Anthropologists learn a lot through observation, and then based on observation leads to a set of questions. And yes, it is a matter of the experience. The Tropicana brand stands for freshness and the injection of energy, because that's you get a high impact and energy surge from drinking orange juice in the morning. Maybe the same you get when you brush your teeth with a very high impact toothpaste. But here's an interesting example that clarifies the point you're making, that it's about the experience. We introduced Tropicana into Japan. And in the research we did there, in our role as if you like, amateur anthropologists, we asked people when they drink their orange juice. And we expected the same answer we get from the typical American household is typically in the morning. There's a large consumption bulge in the mornings for orange juice. And we got a surprise answer. The answer was after a hot bath. And we were perplexed. The first conclusion we drew was that the Japanese are very different from the American consumers in terms of their expectations. And we thought about and discussed this issue because it had to lead to how we would market the product and whether we would have a different benefit, etc. And it suddenly occurred to us as we dug down deeper and deeper into that point, it's exactly the same benefit. How do you feel after a hot bath? Well, you feel a little lacking in energy, right? You're feeling a little down. Now, if you have an orange juice, that injects a little bit of energy. It's exactly the same benefit they're seeking in Japan. There's a tradition there of taking a very long hot bath and sitting in the bath, and then, of course, it saps a bit of energy from you, and then you re-energize through the orange juice. Exactly the same as getting up in the mornings in the U.S. and saying, I'll take my orange juice. we almost went astray and started to offer benefits that were somewhat different from that core benefit of freshness and energy. And luckily, we caught ourselves because we just dug down deeper and made sure we understood what the underlying need was that was being satisfied. So it is about the experience.
Great, great points. I love that you shared that. I want to send an acknowledgement out to one of our listeners, Valerie Reed at Valana Minerals, Professor Peterson. She's actually a sociologist, and she's a professor of sociology at a community college in California. And what has struck me about her is sort of dovetails with what you just said, is that she has really been able to use that knowledge and that experience and that expertise to have a huge advantage over lots of other businesses, simply because she kind of knows where to aim that arrow, because she studies people.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, if you want to study customers, of course, what you're really doing is to study people and what makes mm-hmm. them tick, what
yeah.
their needs are, what their motivations are. And we need to be clever about our questioning, which is really the art of anthropology or sociology.
Mm-hmm.
If you simply go to somebody and say, what is it that you most need
uh-huh.
in this or that product category?
Right.
They're unlikely to give you a really good answer. You need to attack the issue in a much more subtle, indirect way, best is through observation, and then to begin to ask questions. Questions like, when do you mostly have orange juice? Who in your household drinks orange juice? And what are the competing alternatives? That when you think about, you know, wanting to have a beverage, what other beverages do you think about? Iced tea, perhaps, or a cola? And then what makes mm-hmm. you want to have an orange juice instead of those?
You're really asking people how they live their lives.
How they live their lives, absolutely. And they love talking about that. And
yeah.
they begin to explore their own motivations more deeply than they would be able to if you just said, by the way, why do you choose Tropicana?
Yeah, and I guess it shows, too, that you are interested in them. People love to talk about themselves.
Yes, indeed they do. Yes. And I often joke with students who say, well, it's really dead easy, particularly if you get a group of finance executives in a strategy class or a leadership class, and they say, well, really, it's all about the deal. I mean, there's nothing complicated about this. And but understanding customers, even if you're in the finance game, is a critically important skill. Perhaps the most important skill as a business person is understanding your customers better than your competitors do. That's where the competition actually begins. And if they know the customers you're aiming at better than you do and can translate that into better benefits, you know, that's a very serious threat to your business. My favorite example in terms of teasing people about this question of just asking a point-blank question of what is it that you most need in your life? As people call that a gap analysis. Well, imagine this. Before the telephone was invented, if you asked somebody that question, can you imagine a little old lady saying, you know what I most need in my life is a kind of a black instrument with a dial on it and a handle and a line that goes out of my wall and across America, and I can spin the dial with some numbers and speak to my daughter in Peoria. That's what I most need in my life. Well, of course, that's not the way the telephone was invented, not because they interviewed a little old lady and said, they want a telephone. In fact, it was the need to continue communicating and connecting with others in real time. That was the underlying thing. And then the engineers said, well, how can I do that better? That's where the internet comes from, telephony, radio, and all the rest of that.
Very, very interesting. Understanding your customers better than your competitors do. And this sort of dovetails right into your strategic point number four, which is creating winning propositions as opposed to value propositions. Can you dive a little bit deeper into that? Because that really is a mind shift, is it not, for most people?
Yes, it is. And, of course, we let ourselves off the hook if we just pursue a value proposition, because that's just, you know, your right to participate. It's a me too idea. If you talk about a winning proposition, you're talking about the margin of difference that you will offer that creates better value than the competing alternatives, and that's a more demanding question. It's best to look at examples. Let me pick a few really simple examples of companies that we know, large companies, but have simplified their statement of benefits to the winning propositions in my language. Let's take Google, for example. It's a real phenomenon.
Yeah.
And we look at that and say, my goodness, how can they be that successful? Well, here's a stunningly simple statement of the winning proposition from Google. I'm quoting, "We organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful." Now, there are some really important words there. These are very hard things to do. I mean, now with the Internet, everything is just an ocean, a jumble of information. First thing where they do is organize it. Second, make it universally accessible and easy to access, and then make it useful. So those are very important trigger words, and everything they do that attracts customers and advertisers is doing those three things better. Now let's look at Starbucks. You mentioned earlier, Donna Maria, this idea of creating an experience. I love the way they capture that idea. Here it is. We're not in the coffee business serving people. We're in the people business serving coffee. Now those simple statements, and there are other examples, of course, those simple statements take a while to produce. You know, simplicity is not a shortcut. It's hard work. But it's very important clarifying work to mobilize yourself and your staff, no matter how small the staff is, in the pursuit of a very compelling idea that attracts customers. And then if you do an IPO, in due course, I'm sure some of your startups will want to do, the magnet that attracts customers is exactly the same magnet that will attract investors. It's exactly the same. Investors have choices. Why should they give you your money, their money? So you've got these two elements of a winning proposition. Customers have choices. Why should they choose you? Investors have choices. Why should they give you their money?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same magnet, essentially, that attracts them.
Those are excellent examples in their simplicity. And so to expand just a little bit on what you're saying, as small business owners, we obviously don't start with that 12 or 15 word simplistic but very eloquent and effective target or explanation for what we do. So what you're essentially saying is that the process of taking these four steps and finding winning propositions as opposed to just value propositions, it inevitably lead there if you're consistent and focused on what you're doing.
Yes, and here's the point. Questions in strategy making are more important than answers. If you want great answers, you have to find great questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just say this, that answers without great questions are very dangerous things. So it's this process of questioning. And that's what we mean by thinking and functioning strategically. It's the ability to frame these questions and pursue the answers and clarify and simplify and simplify.
And that's also why it's so important. You just made such a good point. When we read about statistics or studies that show this or that, the questions that we ask are so important for that context.
Very, very much so. And I think one of the great arts of leadership is the ability to ask great questions.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the ability to simplify. So, you know, creating increasing simplicity from a world of increasing complexity is a vital thing. There's a lovely quote from Blaise Pascal, the French poet, who wrote a letter to a friend, and in the letter he said, "I am sorry to write you this long letter, but I didn't have time to write you a short one."
Okay, that's good.
Now, let me offer one more example, because it's one of my favorites, actually, of a winning proposition, and it's for in the nonprofit sphere. I don't know if any of your listeners are in the nonprofit sphere, but we can learn from nonprofits, and nonprofits can learn from the commercial sector as well. And I'm talking here about the Girl Scouts of the USA, with whom I work very closely. And they express it as their mission, and their winning proposition elaborates on it a little bit. But here it is. We are the premier leadership development experience for girls. So it was not just when we did the strategy together, it was not just a matter of, oh, well, we do troop activities and we learn life skills and girls can go to camp and girls can work with other girls and form great relationships, etc., and have terrific stimulating experiences. At the heart of this is a really, really big idea, and that is that life is a journey of learning and the development of self. And we tend to think about leadership development as something that starts and takes place with adults. But here we have girls ranging from 7 to 17. And all these programs can be developed along the lines of developing leadership capability, leadership of self, developing a clear set of values, being prepared to stand up for what you believe in, dedication to a cause larger than yourself through community service, bringing out the best in others, interpersonal skills. These are all teachable.
Mm-hmm.
And the earlier you begin, the better it is. So the compelling idea here is this idea of being the premier leadership experience for girls of that age range, 7 to 17. And then, of course, they reminded themselves that they have to give girls what they need in ways that they want.
Right, and in ways they understand. Such good advice from Professor Willie Peterson today, the author of Strategic Learning, How to Be Smarter Than Your Competition and Turn Key Insights into Competitive Advantage. We're going to come back in our final segment, and we're going to talk with Professor Peterson about his insight to action model. How do we put a bow on everything that he's sharing, roll up our sleeves, and get to work making his models work for us? Right here, coming up in just a minute or so after our break, this is Donna Maria. I'm your host on Indie Business Podcast. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Indie Business Podcast. We're talking to Professor Willie Peterson from Columbia University. He's the author of Strategic Learning, How to Be Smarter Than Your Competition and Turn Key Insights into Competitive Advantage. And, you know, I heard a quote the other day. Actually, it was tweeted, and I thought it was so great, I retweeted it. My friend and one of my Indie Beauty members, Anne-Marie Fayola at Brambleberry, that's Brambleberry on Twitter, tweeted this quote, "Vision without execution is hallucination," and she credited Thomas Edison with saying that. So along those lines, what I'd like to do now is ask you about your insight to action model. Can you share the steps that we need to take to actually get to execution so we're not hallucinating?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, that's a lovely quote. And, you know, it just leads to an interesting discussion about the interaction between strategy creation and strategy implementation. The truth of the matter is, as Edison said, if it was indeed Edison, that a vision without execution is just a dream or hallucination. But the reverse is also true, that attempting to implement without clarity of focus is a fool's errand. And this debate actually is often framed as a false choice when people say, well, execution is much more important than strategy creation. The point about it that I'd like to emphasize is that the two are interdependent. If you try and implement without clarity of focus, you'll go astray, and you'll diffuse your efforts. And of course, if you have a clear focus and are unable to mobilize the energies and resources of your organization behind it, you won't succeed. So they're both important. But here is the point that you're raising. Strategy has had to change. A lot of strategy is trapped in old traditional thinking, best captured by the phrase of strategic planning or strategy as planning. For me, we require a fundamental shift from strategy as planning to strategy as learning. An approach that builds agile organizations that are able to learn and adapt as the environment changes. So basically, it's this proposition that in today's fast-changing environment, the old static methods of doing strategy no longer work. A dynamic world demands we meet the challenge with a dynamic process. Now, we have to keep this very simple, but the idea is to move from insight to action. The whole world of strategy is an outside-in discipline. It starts by looking at the external environment, customers and their needs, competitors and their actions, industry and its key trends, and then our own realities. So it's outside and then in. Our own realities, what are our strengths and weaknesses, what is our financial condition, etc., and the resources available to us. So that's a fundamental discipline. So
and you say there are four key steps to this kind of strategic learning that you're referring to.
Yes, there are four steps that bring us from insight to action. Step one in doing strategy, remember the questions we're trying to answer now is who are our customers that we're aiming at, what are their most important needs, what am I going to offer them, how will we win through the winning proposition, and then what are our key priorities. So those are the questions that you answer when you do a strategy. How do you arrive at those answers? Well, it's through this four-step process called strategic learning. Step one, learn. Develop deep insights into the competitive landscape, the needs of your customers, and your own realities. That's step one. Starts with insight. Step two, focus. Apply those insights to determine where are we going to compete. Remember the questions. What will we offer our customers, and how will we win the competition for value creation? That's the winning proposition. Underneath your winning proposition, what will be our 3 to 5 key priorities that the whole organization will focus on in order to achieve that winning proposition? Now you've got a compelling focus, and it's based on insight. Step three, align. So we've got learn, focus, and now to align. Align all the elements of your business system behind this focus and inspire your people to excel. And the fourth step is execute, which is to harness rigorous disciplines to implement your strategy better and faster than your competitors. Now, the key about these four steps is that they have to be converted into a cycle. So each step builds on the previous one. And then it is repeated as a fifth step in a continuous cycle of learning and renewal. So after you execute, after a period of time, once a year or so, you refresh your insights. Because don't forget, the market has moved along. The market is dynamic. Customers' needs are evolving. Demographic factors are changing. Competitors are doing different things. The world won't stand still for you. So hone this capacity to learn. Hone it through asking great questions about customers and competitors. Practice excellence at it. You don't have to be large to do it. It's an advantage to be small and focused and agile. And then re-examine your focus. Is our winning proposition still right? Are the priorities still the right ones in this changing market? How do I need to align as we shift and adjust as we go along? The more agile you are, the faster you are at understanding trends and jumping on them, the better you'll outcompete your competitors.
Now, this is such a valuable flow here. And flow, you know, there's a book called Flow now. I'm reading it. It's like what you're describing is that kind of flow where you create a system and then you rinse and repeat it.
That's right. It's a learning system.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you know, this is why I say it transforms strategy from strategy as planning, which is a static mode, to strategy as learning, which is dynamic, and it's based on questioning and learning and taking insights and converting them into action.
It makes me think about how the business planning process, of course, is not static, but how really the business itself becomes almost like a working document, a working thing that from quarter to quarter, sometimes even month to month, maintains the focus that you said, but how we align to meet that focus changes, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Depending on how the market is shifting and
yes.
what's happening with your business, and you're doing experiments all the time. I mean, if you really think about, and I'm sure your listeners know this at least as well as I do, when you start a business, the overarching questions are, how will I generate and retain customers? And how will I do that in ways that generate satisfactory profits so that I eventually become self-funding? And I can take the cash flow that I'm generating and invest it in growth. So that whole idea of constantly learning what customers need, what competitors are doing, and how I can best satisfy those needs is crucial.
And in a world where our focus, it's almost like, it seems like when I started my business over 10 years ago, It wasn't as hard to focus as it is today. Today there seem to be just so many more options, and certainly with the explosion of social media giving us so many new ways to communicate with our customers, it's more important than ever, is it not, to do that alignment analysis over and over and over again so that you're not doing anything that doesn't fit into a particular, like, bucket of priority.
Yeah, absolutely. So everything you do is in line with your priorities, and the priorities are always shifting in response to the changing environment so that you become a sense and respond organization, not a make and sell organization. Now, a point that you're touching on here is this whole discipline of choice making and focus. So let's just think for a moment about making choices, because that's the heart of strategy, is deciding what you will focus on, what choices you will make in regard to the customers you'll serve, what you'll offer them, etc. A choice is not a choice until you've decided what you will not do. A choice is a trade-off. It involves sacrifice. If you don't determine what you will not do, then you're just piling it on. When you make a choice, you'll say, I'll do A and B and C, and you'll continue doing all the other things as well. Now, as your organization gets larger, that's a great way to strangle it by doing too many things. So the inherent discipline here in choice-making is what you will give up. I'll give you two dramatic examples of this. Think of what Intel did. Intel was a business that focused entirely on memory chips. And then the Japanese competition became very intense. They found their margins were declining. They had, about 10 years earlier, invented the microprocessor, but had not yet turned it into a business. And they took this breathtaking decision under Andy Grove. We will stop memory chips, and we will enter the microprocessor business, which was, of course, a huge bet by saying we'll stop doing our base business, our core business, and launch a new one in its place. So it wasn't that they would do it in addition. They didn't say, well, let's continue with our memory chips and launch microprocessors. They realized they did not have the resources to do an outstanding job in both. And they made the bet, and of course that was their pathway to greatness. Now that's a very dramatic example of deciding what you will not do and having the courage to back that up with action.
Mm-hmm.
The second example is IBM. IBM, of course, were the inventors of the mainframe and all the rest of that stuff, and at a certain time, because PCs became a really big business, they launched their own PC business. And after a period of time, they decided that that was not going to be their future. They didn't just downplay it and say, well, we'll de-emphasize that and concentrate more strongly, particularly on our consulting and service business. They got out of it. They actually sold it. We'll stop doing that, because the longer your list of priorities, the less chance you have of achieving any of them. So adding priorities is very dilutive. It dilutes everything else. The most focused organizations have got the discipline of determining what they will do and what they will not do.
The longer your list of priorities, the smaller chance you'll have of achieving any of them.
Yes. And that's kind of like the law of gravity. There's nothing more powerful than focus multiplied by compounding. Now, you know, people say to me, what do you mean compounding? Well, we all know what that means in financial terms. Compounding means I reinvest the interest and I get an exponential return. Quick example. If I save $100 a month and between the age of 25 and 65 and put it under my mattress, I've got $48,000. If I invested at 8% and reinvest the interest over that same period, I have $300,000, six times greater. That's the power of compounding. Now, I'm not talking about financial compounding. I'm talking about reinvesting the learning. So it only works if you have an intense focus on very few things and constantly learn your way to success, doing those few things better and better, reinvesting the learning, and you get the exponential effect in your performance. It only works if you have an intense focus on very few things, and then you can multiply it by the compounding.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I like to express that formula is subtract, then multiply.
Subtract, then multiply. Very, very good advice. Such insight from Professor Willie Peterson, the author of Strategic Learning, How to Be Smarter Than Your Competition and Turn Key Insights into Competitive Advantage. Tell us where we should go online to learn more about you and what you have to offer.
Well, that's a very nice invitation. I have a website, williepeterson.com, and information is there about various things I've written and the two books, and you're kind enough to mention the most recent one, which really, the one that came out, the one you're mentioning, Strategic Learning, brings all the thinking up to date with the most recent examples and a deeper treatment through practical frameworks and so on of all of these elements of creating winning strategies.
And I want to make sure that we spell your name for people, because it's a little bit different from what we're used to. It's Willie, of course, W-I-L-L-I-E, and then Peterson is spelled P-I-E-T-E-R-S-E-N. So go to williepeterson.com for more information, and there's a link there where you can purchase a book and also his other books. And we're just really excited to have had your insights here and the wealth of understanding. You've done such an excellent job of boiling it down into the few minutes that we have here for the show. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Donna Maria. It was my pleasure.
All right, everyone. Next week, right here on the Indie Business Podcast, we have Neil Tepper. He is the author of Prescriptions for Living a Creative Life, Simple Remedies for Common Maladies in Our 24/7 World. And boy, do I need some simple remedies for the fast pace we're living in today. We're going to be talking about tips for finding the bridge to creativity that leads to greater power, passion, and purpose in your business. That's right here, June 28th on the Indie Business Podcast. You can learn more on Indie Business Radio. Check us out on iTunes. And also, you can go to my blog and click on podcasts and listen to the shows and read summaries as well. If you don't have time to listen, I summarize it for you as well, so you have more time to do all the things that Professor Peterson just said need to be done. Thanks for joining, everyone. I'll see you next week right here. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.